You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
What, no go?
You can go whatever you want then. We're recording.
All right.
Open up this pit, boils and ghouls.
You are listening to the very special 31st episode of the Toilet Hall Radio Show. It's a coincidence today. It's also the 31st of October. I believe that is some kind of satanic indicator that this will be the spookiest, the spookiest episode of this toilet-themed podcast that you've ever heard. I'm positive of it. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me today, Randall Thor, and 365 Days of Horror. You know, the coincidences keep stacking up here. We're going to listen to some spooky music. We're going to talk about spooky movies. We are going to adopt the essence of spooky in general. So,
I'm actually wearing nothing but a sheet with two eye holes carved out right now.
I've been watching nothing but the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episodes, you know, for 2 weeks, so I'm straight ready for this.
Oh boy.
I don't want to alarm anyone right now, but there is a skeleton inside of your house right now.
It's fucked.
What?
Fucked if true.
What can I do to get rid of it?
Punch yourself as hard as possible.
Do I need to get rid of my milk?
In fact, I think you need more milk. It's the only way to get rid of it. Healthy, strong bones. It'll just shoot right out of your mouth and run away.
So, you fellas have any big plans for the big holiday? The big spooktacular holiday?
For me, Friday was a costume contest at work, but I had my cousin was getting married this weekend, so I didn't really have much time between going to work and going to the rehearsal dinner, so I was unable to dress up, although my costume would have been, it would have been spooky and uncanny in a different way, not like he's a spooky skeleton kind of way, but, oh, this guy is wearing that, why? I was going to wear my space pants with jorts on over it with my American flag cut off T-shirt and just gone full space America.
Yeah, that's why. Brother. That's why I don't like. That's why I don't participate in costume things at work. It's like, no, I understand. There's an opportunity here to be inappropriate, and I will not take this because people will remember the next day.
Well, since I make a lot of my Facebook posts public, because I think that's fun, because then people you don't know show up to fight you, which is really fun. A lot of my coworkers have actually seen everything that I post. So when I did that collaboration, we'll call it, with Discordia, when they were here with just my jorts and the recorder, everybody at work saw that before I even got to work the next morning. So they're aware of the kind of things I get up to when I'm not at work. They've seen my most recent profile picture with just me. No shirt, just Dragon Ball Z leggings, my gut hanging out. So I did double check, and yes, those are work appropriate if I wear something over them to cover the crotchal region. And that was what I was going to do. So, and they were all very disappointed when I showed up in regular clothes.
I just wouldn't do that ever with any place that paid me.
It would have been great. Plus, there's a couple guys who are kind of homophobic, and that would have made them very uncomfortable and would have made me very happy.
Homophobia in North Carolina?
What? No. crazy. And then last night there was a cool costume contest on the road, but same thing, wedding. The wedding was beautiful, and I'm not griping that I couldn't do these things because of the wedding, but you know what I mean.
Okay, I mean, I will do it for you. Like, what kind of a monster, what kind of a sick, egotistical monster schedules their wedding for Halloween weekend? Like, and it's
my cousin, who I love very much, actually.
Was it even horror-themed?
No.
The horror of marriage?
Yeah, that makes them a bad person. You're stealing the joy of the season.
Actually, I got a horror.
One in your family.
I got a horror story for you then, actually. So I grew up a very conservative home, right? You know, lots of my friends got married growing up. You know, older friends, obviously, not like 14-year-olds getting married. And it is North Carolina, but we're not that crazy. And, you know, every single wedding I went to, always had a good time. We always had fun. And when I got to college, I went to a wedding, and my friends in college were like, oh, man, open bar, woo! And I asked them, what do you mean open bar? Until I got to college, did not know that most people enjoy weddings because there's an open bar there, that people enjoy going to weddings because of the reception, they all get trashed.
I've only been to one wedding with an open bar, so.
Okay, I feel so much better now. So, yeah, there was no alcohol there last night.
You know, because my friends that party, they don't need to get married.
True. Well, or they can't.
That too.
Because they're still partying in their late 20s. No, never stop partying.
Never,
listen to Andrew,
never
but we
stop.
Can't.
Yeah, there you go.
So that was kind of poor.
365, did you get up to anything?
Nah, you know, I love Halloween, obviously, but, like, I don't really go out to party all that much. I don't get dressed up like you guys. You know, my work is doing something tomorrow or some sort of costume competition. And for me, it's like either don't do it or go all out and win. And I don't think my coworkers would appreciate me going like full Babadook and like walking up behind people and making the spooky voice or anything like that.
Babadook.
Exactly. I do have like my own little Halloween traditions. I like to watch, I don't know if you guys remember this, the old Garfield cartoon from the 80s.
Oh, hell yeah.
They had a Halloween special, and just, I remember my dad taped it off of TV on a VHS, and he used to watch it a lot. So it's on YouTube now if anyone wants to go check it out. So I like to watch that every year. I like to watch Pontypool every year, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Ooh. And I like to watch a horror movie that I haven't seen before, usually something that's been recommended to me that I just haven't gotten the chance to watch. And in past years, it hasn't worked out as well, but I'm going to dig into Netflix and a few other places and watch something that I haven't seen before.
Nice. Went to a Halloween party last night, so I'm a little slow this morning, but it was good. Have you guys ever seen the movie Murder Party?
No.
No.
No. It was the director that did The Green Room and Blue Ruin. This was his first movie, I believe. It's basically, it's a silly movie. The underlying subtext is that he really hated going to art school. It's a fun movie to check out. Myself and a few friends, we went as characters from that movie. I was a baseball fury, which would work in the context of that movie, or of course, The Warriors, if you've ever seen that. If you haven't seen that, you should.
It's great.
It is. And the big plan for tonight is we are going to the Satanic Panic Room, which I'm not entirely sure what it is, but it sounds awesome. The Alamo Draft House is putting this escape room challenge thing on. Have you guys ever heard of these things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the page now. It's like, what's an escape room? Because I genuinely don't know. It says, escape rooms are physical, real-life adventures. In the Satanic Panic Room, you're locked in with a group, and you have to find your way out. Players must use their wits, find clues, and solve puzzles to unlock the door and escape the room within the time limit. The Satanic Panic Room has been lovingly and demonically engineered by Bottleneck Immersive to create a heart-pounding, fun, and memorable experience. So we're going to race against the clock or run out of time where we are ritually sacrificed, to appease Satan. So that sounds fun.
Joke's on them when you bring a sledgehammer and just pound through the door.
You know, one thing I never understood is haunted houses. Are you guys a fan of those? Like, you know, actually going to a place where you pay $50 to have a teenager touch you? It's that's
only $50.
What? I can do that for $50. What a steal!
That didn't come out the way that I had hoped. But for real, like, get your pimply fucking hands off me, kids! Like, I don't understand the appeal of a haunted house. So we'll see how. We'll see how the satanic panic room works.
Yeah, panic rooms or escape rooms are becoming a popular thing lately, I've noticed. Like, one of my friends had a birthday a couple weeks ago that I totally didn't go to, and they hosted it at a panic room, or escape room. I keep calling it a panic room. They hosted an escape room, and they're always themed somehow, so you got the cream of the crop there, satanic panic. That sounds awesome. But some of the other ones were like, 40s detective, nah. And it sounds supremely boring. I would hate
doing that. That sounds like a step above dinner theater.
Yeah, but if you're telling me, oh yeah, you're going to be sacrificed to Satan if you don't get out of the room, and everything's occult themed, then yeah, I'm totally in. But if you're like, oh, you got to start with this murder before you can escape the room, see? Meh. And then I just want to sit in the corner and find or search for a rope and hang myself.
Yeah, the panic room sounds way more fun. You get to hang out with Jodie Foster, you know, eat MREs.
Isn't Bruce Willis in that? Watch him like run through brick walls, literally.
Wait, was he in Panic Room?
No. Wait, what movie is he in?
Jared Leto was in Panic Room.
What were you talking about, Randall?
I don't know. What movie is Bruce Willis in that's similar to that?
Die Hard.
Die Hard 2.
Well, yeah, obviously he's in Die Hard.
Die Hard 3.
Die Harder with a Vengeance.
Love for your Die Hard. No, I thought he was in. I thought Bruce Willis was in a movie like that where, like, his family goes into a panic room and the killers are in the house and he's trying to get back and beat them up.
It sounds kind of like Die Hard, man.
No, okay, whatever. Yeah, I feel like everything's gonna sound like Die Hard for you from now on.
It might. I mean, Die Hard's
awesome. You know, it's a movie about the guy from the planet Krypton, and he's weak to kryptonite. Oh, yeah, definitely Die Hard.
Well, I've yet to see any real weakness of John McClane. In each one of his increasingly astounding adventures, he becomes more and more superhuman. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm not doubting the abilities of Bruce Willis or John McClane. I'm pretty convinced Bruce Willis is the closest thing we'll ever get to a mutant or superhuman.
But there are 364 days out of the year for Die Hard. Yes. Halloween is not the time for Die Hard. Halloween is the time for spookier movies.
Hey, you brought up Die Hard.
Time out. I did some research. Okay. Randall didn't make this up. There is a Bruce Willis movie involving a panic room. It's called Hostage.
Thank you.
From 2005. Wow. I don't think I've ever heard of this.
I've never heard of that either.
It's good, but, I mean, it's kind of scary, but it's more of a thriller than scary, so it's not really Halloween appropriate.
Okay.
The more you know.
GTFO. Yeah, you weren't lying. Crazy.
Right? Crazy.
I don't know.
Clock is right. Twice a day.
What's your favorite Halloween movie, Randall?
My favorite Halloween movie? I don't even know, man. I grew up and was never super duper into the whole Halloween thing, or dressing up because I was a loser. As far as dressing up goes, I wasn't really interested in that until recently. And as far as Halloween goes, I dislike the trick or treat part and getting candy or giving away candy. Both of those things are fun.
Wait, did you didn't dress up to trick or treat as a kid?
I did, but my parents literally had to make me.
Weird.
And it was awful. Yeah, man. It's weird and crazy as I am now with dressing up in outrageous outfits. As a kid, I hated it. My life was not ideal growing up as far as my own personal taste.
Certainly changed.
Yeah, a little bit. Favorite Halloween movie? Come back to me. I don't know. I'll think about it.
Give it up, 365. You know them all.
I really have a special place in my heart for George Romero's original of the Dead trilogy. Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. my dad introduced me to like the horror genre when I was like probably 10 or maybe 11 years old. We bought the Dawn of the Dead VHS cassette tape, and he said, "You'll like this. It has zombies in them all." And it pretty much boils down the entire movie to one sentence. But
yeah, pretty much.
I absolutely love those movies. Beyond just the zombie horror, blood, fun, gore stuff, I really like a lot of the social commentary that's in the movies. You know, they're smart, they make sense, they make points. It's not just chainsaws and hacksaws cutting off limbs, which is fine, but I think those are really the tops for me.
It's a good pick. Good pick.
I think I figured mine out, if you want me to go, or do you want to go ahead and go?
Yeah, you go ahead and tell me.
All right, so I'm going to go with Evil Dead, the original. And that's because I remember when I first saw it, obviously I've known about it for years. This was 3 years ago, I believe. So I finally said, the girl I was dating at the time, let's watch it tonight. And I was expecting, because I've seen clips from the Evil Dead 2, as well as, I'm brain farting on the name,
Army of Darkness.
Yeah. So I've seen clips from that, and they're all kind of, a lot of it gets really silly, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking Evil Dead 1 will be kind of silly as well. And it's just, you know, it's relentless. It just doesn't end. It's just brutal. And I was really tired at the end of the movie, and I didn't want to do anything else, and I just wanted to kind of quit for a while.
Did you ever see the remake of Evil Dead?
No, I don't plan on it unless told otherwise.
It is brutal. Like,
okay.
Amazingly so.
The original was that way.
You didn't like it?
No, I know people loved it when it came out, and I saw it in theaters, and it's just like, this is it kind of feeling. It's like, you know, hand gets chopped off, guy gets, you know, something in his eye. All right, I get it. It kind of took a lot of the fun out of the original movie for me. It just felt like it was an hour and a half long snuff film.
Yeah, a little bit. I've never been a huge fan of the original Evil Dead, though, so, you know, what are you going to do? My favorite Halloween movie is probably actually Halloween 3, The Season of the Witch. For folks that aren't familiar, that is the lone movie in the Halloween franchise that does not feature Michael Myers. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that the Halloween series was originally planned as like a anthology type series, so it would be a different story every time. But people saw Halloween, they loved Michael Myers so much, they went ahead and made Halloween 2 with more Michael Myers, and then they released number 3 with zero Michael Myers, and people were pissed. They were like, oh, what is this garbage? Well, because these people are dumb, they miss out on a fantastic movie. It's hard to explain, because the entire movie is insane. Essentially, the hot item of the year is these three Halloween masks from Silver Shamrock, a shady Irish-owned company, and because they are Irish, they were inherently untrustworthy. So kids love these masks. There are all of these commercials that are, the commercials being played in the movie are fantastic. They're just so low budget. Everything's pretty low budget. But the kids, they got to have these masks. And the announcer is telling them that they have to watch this broadcast at a certain time while wearing their masks. And when they do, evil things happen. It's revealed that it's all being controlled by druids and Stonehenge and further unsavory Irishmen.
There's Men in Black in the movie, too.
There are. Really, the entire meta-analysis of the movie is that the Irish are untrustworthy. So if that sounds intriguing to you, you should probably check it out.
I think for that, I'm not a big fan of the movie, but it's one of the best endings of any horror movie. Like the last minute is just incredible.
Oh yeah, it's super gnarly. So yeah, that's my pick on that. You know, obviously I love stuff like Candyman and Hellraiser. Those are classics for a reason.
I have not seen very many movies, but I have seen the first Hellraiser and I adored it. It was that is a kind of movie you want popcorn with and you want one of your best friends with and just to laugh and roar at the movie as it goes. Not because it's funny, but just because it's so outrageous and fun. to me.
I've
at least
bad news, Randall, about if you liked Hellraiser, there's like 9 other movies and they're terrible.
They're really bad.
But I've heard you have to do them anyways.
Yeah, Hellraiser 2 is actually pretty good. Hellraiser 3 is just barely acceptable, and then from there, it's further levels, further circles of hell. It's garbage, man.
Well, I feel like it you know, continues down the theme of experience, you know, because the Cenobites are all trying to explore pain in exotic and insane ways, right? In extra-dimensional ways. So by watching the rest of the Hellraiser movies, you're kind of becoming one of them by subjecting yourself to such terrible things, right?
I suppose. They have such sights to show you.
Exactly. I almost named Shin Godzilla as my horror movie because I just saw it and I'm obsessed with it. And in a way, it is a horror movie. The sense of dread and despair in it is pretty high for the first half. And then the second half sucks.
I think we would be remiss not to mention John Carpenter's The Thing when talking about best horror movies.
It's a really great movie. Kurt Russell is Kurt Russell at his Kurt Russelliest. 5'2" Anxious of Fury.
And a flamethrower.
Yeah, we got to take a break, but I got some good news. We got some new music here that I don't believe anybody has heard. This is a track called Gigi Ouija, which is about Gigi Allen being summoned via Ouija board. This is by Renegades of Shack. That was Gigi Ouija by Renegades of Shack. I believe the story there is accidentally summoning Gigi Allen via Ouija board. Which sounds like a terrible idea in general.
Yeah, that's horror. That's Halloween right there.
You shouldn't try to necromance the dead just as a PSA. It's not a good idea. But it's probably not a good idea to necromance like Nelson Mandela, much less Gigi Allen, a man who was known for violently shitting on the stage and then throwing it at you.
Yeah, I mean, of all the people you could summon, that would be down at the bottom of the list. Like, you know, there's like, obviously at the bottom you got people like Hitler or, you know, serial killers and stuff like that. And Gigi Allen wouldn't be that far down, but he'd be pretty close, I think.
It wouldn't be a lot. Well, I guess it could be fun. I think he knew how to, you know, when he wasn't terrorizing people, he probably knew how to party.
I don't know if I want to know what his version of partying was.
I want to hear the follow-up to this song, like, the day after you necromanced Gigi Allen. Like, just the band talking about how they're, like, struggling to get ghost shit stains out of the rug.
Meaning to ectoplasm.
Yeah, the next song is titled Getting Hepatitis from the Ghost of Gigi Allen.
Oh, my God.
So, Christ!
Cap?
No.
Gigi Allen?
Fuck.
What'd you do?
Just a horrific muscle spasm.
Just out of nowhere?
I think I've somehow angered the ghost of Gigi Allen.
It's too late, he's gone. Run.
It's too late, he's got you.
Sorry about that. I was... Christ, that hurt. Making a segue there that, oh, that's a spooky story. We should come up with our own spooky stories. But we fucking did it. So, you know, whatever.
You literally just got possessed by the ghost of Gigi Allen into having a muscle spasm.
That was uncomfortable. I don't know, guys. I thought it might be fun if we told some spooky stories on the radio, because that's a format that would fit this, I suppose. So let me go ahead and cue some scary music. I think that'll probably do.
Spooky.
This is a story I wrote in a minute and a half between segments, so it's going to scare your pants off. The reports had been on the radio all day, though she hadn't paid much attention to them. Some crazy man had escaped from a metalcore band in the Northeast. They were calling him the Labani Man. He had voluntarily chopped off his right hand and replaced it with a gun to better celebrate his God-given Second Amendment rights.
Hail Dale.
He was deranged, and everyone in the region was warned to keep watch and report anything suspicious. But this didn't interest her. She was more worried about what to wear on her date, like a typical woman. She chose her best dress and was ready and waiting on the porch when her boyfriend came up to pick her up in his unregistered truck, because it's tyranny to make citizens pay taxes for their private property. They went to a drive-in movie with another couple, then dropped them off and went parking in the local lover's lane. She cuddled close to her boyfriend as they kissed to the sound of romantic metalcore on the radio. When the announcer came on and repeated the warning that she had heard that afternoon, an insane libertarian with a gun in place of his right hand was loose in the area. Suddenly, the dark, moonless night didn't seem so romantic after that. The lover's lane was secluded and off the beaten track. It was a perfect spot for a deranged metalcore man to lurk, she thought, pushing her amorous boyfriend away. Maybe we should get out of here, she said. That Labani man sounds dangerous. Aw, come on, babe, it's nothing, her boyfriend said, trying to get another kiss. She pushed him away again. No, really, we're all alone out here. I'm scared, she said. They argued for a moment. Then the car shook, as if someone or something had touched it. She gave a shriek and said, get us out of here now! Jeez, her boyfriend said in disgust. But he turned the key on his coal-rolling truck and went roaring out of the lover's lane with a screech in his tires. They drove home in stony silence when they pulled up in her driveway. He refused to help her out of the truck. He was being so unreasonable, she fumed to herself. She opened the door indignantly and stepped into her driveway with her chin up and lips set. Whirling around, she slammed the door as hard as she could, and then she screamed! Her boyfriend leapt out of the truck and caught her in her arms. What is it? What's wrong? He shouted. Then he saw it. Hanging from the handle of the passenger side door, there it was. The disembodied hand of the free market.
I'm speechless with horror.
We need to give people a moment to change their pants, perhaps.
Many people don't know that the invisible hand of the free market actually gave Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson his haircut.
Oh, wow. It's really impressive.
I believe it.
At 365, I hear you got a real spooktacular tale for us.
I do indeed. I actually have a few different books here, since I'm the resident horror master of the Toilet of Hell radio show. Let's see what we got here.
I feel like you're our dungeon master right now.
Yeah.
I've got the tale of the uncoordinated two-stepper.
I believe that's about me.
Possibly. They found it living inside Chris Barnes' hair. The power ballad that ate Charlotte.
Is that a horror story or a wet dream?
Whatever works for you.
Yeah.
Dracula Bonte. The scene that would not die but totally should. Okay, here's a good one. It's called In Flames, Star In, The Nostalgic Necromancer. The music slowly faded in the old recording studio in Stockholm, Sweden. The world-famous metal band In Flames had just put the finishing touches on their latest album. "Great job, gang," said the band's vocalist, Anders Frieden. "Yeah, that one random part with the children's choir singing was totally groovy," said guitarist Bjorn Gallant. "I think this is going to be the best album ever," exclaimed bassist Peter Iwers. Suddenly, the lights began to flicker in the studio. The channels on the mixing board began changing on their own. "Like, what the heck is going on?" yelled rhythm guitarist Nicholas Englund. "Ruh-roh," whimpered the band's new drummer Joe Rickard as he closed his eyes with his hands. The speakers in the studio crackled with electricity as an eerie voice emerged. Or, call, it said. "What?" shouted Anders. Lou, ner, 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 straight, said the raspy voice. "Jinkies," said Bjorn. "Wait, I don't get it." "Clay, clay, 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 man, said the voice a little louder this time. "Clay who?" asked the confused Nicholas. "Ah, for the love of lingonberry pancakes, I'm saying the name of your old album," boomed the voice on the speakers. "Oh," said In Flames in unison. Out of nowhere, an apparition appeared before the band, cloaked in dark robes and wearing the mask of their mascot, the Jester Head. "I am the nostalgic necromancer, and I will haunt you forever unless you revert back to your old ways. Better songwriting, more solos, excellent riffs, creativity, structure. If you do not comply, it will be the end of In Flames." An unnatural wind kicked up in the studio, sending a scared Joe Rickard into the arms of Peter Iwers. The move caused Bjorn to lose his glasses. "I can't see without my glasses," he shouted. Bjorn crawled on the floor, frantically trying to find his glasses. In his search, he accidentally unplugged the studio's Wi-Fi router, causing the apparition of the nostalgic necromancer to disappear and the wind to stop. "Golly," said Anders, "is everyone okay?" "Jinkies, look at that," said Bjorn as he put his glasses back on. "There's a creepy light coming from behind that wall. Let's check it out." "Zoinks, like no way. Game over, man, game over," said Nicholas. Using his natural instincts, Joe the drummer began sniffing at the wall, accidentally pushing a hidden button that opened it up to a secret stairwell. In Flames descended the stairs and found the nostalgic necromancer frantically trying to restart the Wi-Fi. "Yes, I unplugged it and plugged it back in. Yes, I waited 10 seconds, he shouted over the phone to the Time Warner Cable customer service member. Anders spun the nostalgic necromancer around and grabbed him. "Let's see who you really are, nostalgic necromancer," he shouted as he ripped off the jester mask. "Jesper Stromblad," In Flames gasped. "That's right, it was me, your old guitarist. I was trying to scare you into making good albums again. It would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for you meddling In Flamers." "Golly, this seems like a lot of effort for something that's never going to happen," said Peter. "Yeah, you might as well have complained in the comment section of YouTube," said Bjorn. "Hey, gang," said Anders, "I've got an idea. Let's make a 3-minute and 30-second generic song with no solos or riffs that would be perfect for the radio, but would never actually get played on the radio. We can call it Stromblad." "No," shouted Jesper Stromblad. In Flames laughed heartily as they went back into the studio and cranked out another disappointing song.
Wow, man. Well done. Well done.
Exceptional writing.
I felt like I was really there, really feeling the mystery machine of In Flames.
I don't want to imagine. Didn't South Park do an episode like that with Korn too?
Yes.
and it was beautiful. I feel like all crappy metal bands should be reimagined as the Scooby-Doo gang.
I got no complaint with that, man.
That would be pretty rad.
To see like bands like Deicide and Vital Remains do that.
Well, gee, aww. Golly gee.
Glenn Benton is so serious. I'd love to see him as a Velma character. I think that'd be great.
Let's see. Yeah, I could see that.
I've got some new music here that I believe you're going to want to hear, Randall.
Oh?
Do you like Swedish traditional heavy / power metal?
Yeah.
All right, then. Here we go. This is Screamer with On My Way.
We'll be right back.
You just heard On My Way by Screamer, some heavy metal from Sweden for you. That's going to be out on Hell Machine early next year on High Roller Records. So be on the lookout for that. I'm looking forward to hearing more of that. You know, Randall, that's more music your speed, but I dug it too. Those guys, they got it all, man. They got the chops. They got the melodies. They got this gumption. They can go all the way, baby.
I am going to turn you into a true metalhead bit by bit, and so now I've found kind of the ice pick I need to use on you, and that's just true traditional heavy metal with decent production. So I'm not going to get you into, like, say, Omen necessarily, but if I get you a new band like Screamer or, you know, Sumerland, stuff like that, then I've got your number right there. Screamer, actually, their drummer, I believe, Henrik, was at Frost and Fire Fest with us, and me and him became pretty good friends.
Oh, it was Henrik that emailed me, so that must be
yes.
the connection.
Did he call you a poser?
Yes, he did call me a poser.
Excellent. That's what I told everybody to do. Yeah, Henrik is the man. Really cool. He's like 8 feet tall. He is an ice giant, actually.
Sweet.
I'm not exaggerating, though. He is definitely at least 6'8". But he's a large man. But yeah, he was at Frost and Fire Fest. He's one of the few people that I'm aware of that came from out of the continental U.S. and, you know, all the way from Sweden. That's incredible. And so, you know, he got to see the rebirth and reintroduction of Kirith Ungul to the world of heavy metal. And I cannot imagine that trip was not worth it because Kirith Ungul was so tremendous live. But anyways, enough about Henrik, as great as he is. His band is also great. There's actually two Screamers. There's one from the 80s, and they're pretty good. But I honestly, sorry, old Screamer, I think the new Screamer is a lot better. And I believe they got a couple albums out now that are both pretty excellent. Just fun, melodic, riffy, ballsy, heavy metal. Stuff like you just heard.
Yeah, and so they have two records out right now. What we just played was a demo from their upcoming record, so that you can get a taste of what's going to come out soon. So I can only assume that we're going to hear more from this band as they have more material dropping.
Yes, definitely keep an eye on them. They just play pure, no-frills heavy metal, and it's excellent. I'm looking at the album art for this, and it's perfect. It's literally yellow background, a Black Panther, and that's it. Sweet. You don't need anything else.
That's awesome. All right, so last week we decided this week we would watch a movie together, and then we would discuss it. The choice was made by 365 Days of Horror. The movie was Pontypool. We are going to discuss this movie, and we are going to drop all kinds of mad spoilers all over this bitch. So if you're not interested in hearing all about this movie, if you've never seen it, you're going to want to go ahead and skip to the end of the show to hear the last song, because this movie's been out for like 8 years, so fucking deal with it, man. If you did your due diligence and you watched the movie this week, you're ready to talk about it with us. And if not, woe be to you. So let's get into this. 365, you've seen this movie a number of times, is that correct?
Yep, I usually watch it once a year around Halloween time, since I saw it for the first time about 4 years ago, I'd say.
Gotcha. Yeah, I had no idea what to expect from this movie, but pretty much from the first minute, I was pretty enraptured by this thing. It is a really, really great horror movie. Just general impression, Randall, what did you think?
I honestly kind of wanted to hear 365's explanation for it and his love of it, because I was very mixed on it. I thought the idea was extremely creative, very, very well done. But towards the last half, especially the last 20 minutes or so, it just completely lost me. And I was, especially the, I believe the scene after the credits, which I guess should...
Yeah, well, we can talk about
we'll
that in a minute. Let's go ahead and take
I'm just saying it kind of lost me there. And
let's take this bit by bit, okay?
Okay, sure.
So we've got Pontypool, which is, you know, upon first hearing that word, I said it to myself a number of times. And I assume that that's a pretty regular occurrence because Pontypool is such a strange thing to say. You want to say it over and over again. There's a description in the very first couple of seconds of the movie that explains what Pontypool is. And it's the name of a small town, but it's also a series of strange verbal occurrences that have created this coincidence. And we've got this guy who is a combination of Dr. Fraser Crane and Kinky Friedman, who is on the phone with his agent and he's mad about something. I don't know. He's got a really great voice, though. And it's dark outside. It's snowing. Everything looks miserable. And then a woman slams on his door window and is repeating words to him.
And blood, 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 blood.
Yeah. He looks around. She's gone. He doesn't see anything anymore. So he continues on his way to work. And our boy Grant Mazzie, as he's known, he is now the host of a small radio show in a small town of Pontypool. From what I can gather, he was some kind of big shot previously, and he's been downgraded severely for reasons that are unknown. But he does. But he does.
I mean, it's kind of
drinking.
Made clear that he was kind of a douchebag.
Yeah,
he was like a shock jock kind of. I interpreted as him being kind of like a Don Imus type.
Ah, so he probably said something racist and got taken off the air.
Yep.
But from the.
But he did mention specifically that's why I got fired, because he's being a douchebag, and she's telling him, you're being a douchebag. And then he goes, that's why I got fired. And then drank more alcohol.
Yeah, from the first moment he walks into the studio, his producer hands him a bottle of scotch that he starts pouring into his coffee. I'm going to guess the time in the movie is roughly 5:30 a.m. If anyone's stomach can handle that at 5:30 in the morning, they're stronger. Man than I am, but anyway, he continues on. He's trying to rile up, I'm assuming, the 40 people that are listening to the show by reporting on drunk cops and claiming conspiracy theories of the government. It's I don't think he's terribly good at his job, to be honest with you guys.
Yeah, he just starts making up crap like, oh, they're out to get you. They're gonna come with guns and. We're not safe, and the cops are probably drunk too. And then,
in a way, that is very Alex Jonesy.
Yeah, there's entire news stations that do that, and they're very successful.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh's got a pretty strong hold around here.
And he has for like fucking 30 years, man. Anyway, I don't think he's nearly as inflammatory as anybody like that, but he's definitely trying to rustle some jimmies. So. They're getting a report from Ken Loney, the helicopter traffic guy, which is surprising because Pontypool is so small. It's like, oh.
He doesn't have a helicopter. He's in a Dodge Dart, but yes. He makes helicopter noises.
Which is brilliant. I don't know why anybody would pay for helicopter coverage for their news station. Just, you know, have the guy drive around in a Dodge Dart with the chopper blades and the cassette tape. Ken Loney reports that there is chaos at a doctor's office. There is people spilling out and in savagery. It's very much in the vein of Naked Lunch, the book, and that people have just lost it. They're the savage version of themselves. Trying to rip through people to find like something inside of them, just tearing each other limb from limb in a bloody mess. Hundreds of people in this small town are just bursting through this doctor's office and destroying the building and killing each other. And it's at this moment that I think the movie really hits a high note because Grant Mazzie, his producer and his assistant, they're all basically in an underground office. They can't see any of this. They're just getting reports from phone calls from people about all of this happening. So I thought this was one of the stronger draws of the movie, is that you don't necessarily, and because it was a, you know, very obviously a lower budget movie, you don't see the chaos as much as you hear about it. Am I wrong on that? You guys tell me.
I think that's the strongest part of the movie, is that for the most part you see almost nothing. The movie is done in, I don't know if you've ever heard of the term in television episodes, a bottle episode, where it takes place in just one location. And pretty much the entire movie takes place in just the studio. And just have these couple of people that the audience is introduced to. So we're right there with them. We don't see what's happening. We don't know what's going on. In like traditional horror movies, the audience kind of knows the rules, you know, don't let them bite you. Don't, you know, you have to shoot them in the head, destroy the brain. This isn't like a traditional horror movie, a traditional zombie movie, I should say, in that they're not technically zombies. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what they look like. We don't know how to stop them.
So Ken Loney, they get his dog's dart. They took his dog's dart from him. He's on foot trying to escape. And he's calling into the studio describing his adventures. He's found himself out at a grain silo. And there are people around murdering each other. He finds a woman's large adult boy who's lost his hands and is screaming internally in a baby's voice calling for his mother. And this is all being transported on the radio in this conversation with Grant Mazzei. In the meantime, the radio is intercepted by a French-speaking person, and there's a warning there. It's telling people basically, don't speak English, remain indoors, don't use terms of endearment, and do not translate this message to English, which of course they do immediately. And this is where it's kind of the movie tries to diagnose what's happening, and that there's something in the words that people are saying that's causing this madness. And I thought this was why it was a really great choice, 365, why you chose this movie, because it's about radio and the words that we use and the language that we use and how it affects the people that listen to us. Granted, this is 50 minutes into a podcast that roughly 300 people a week listen to, so the audience we affect with this transmission will be less dangerous than the audience in Pontypool.
Honey.
Wasn't
that one of the words?
Honey is one of the words. Honey is the word.
It's the name of the cat.
Name of a missing cat. There are all of these little rhetorical ticks that come and go in a cyclical motion throughout the movie, where it all kind of becomes this cycle of words and phrases that just happen over and over again and affect people in different ways. Honey being one of the examples of that. So kill, another word. It's
Sample.
People are developing these tics and they repeat them, they get stuck on them. They begin to lose their mind stuck on a single word because the word suddenly makes too much sense to them, or not enough sense. That's actually a question I've got. What is your interpretation on that?
365, I want to hear what you got first.
When you say interpretation of just like the concept
of the
movie?
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the appeals of, you know, comedian George Carlin, he was always focused on like words and the meaning of words. And it kind of comes back to this movie, is slang and just words we use every day kind of lose all meaning. And in this movie, like, the meanings change and affect us. We could see that in like social media, when a hashtag goes viral and people just start bringing up things that they never talked about before, words that don't actually make sense, but now they do make sense, and it kind of affects just the general population. And I think it's one of the big appeals of the movie, is just kind of introspection on the audience itself, like, oh, I do tend to say this word a lot. That's kind of weird. Or, you know, people are distracted. Has anyone ever attracted weird jaunts that your mind can go on while you're being enveloped by this, you know, psychological thriller of a movie that you don't know what's going to happen next? And it's very much the same thing as in real life. You know, Dimitri Martin, a comedian I like, has a joke. It simply goes, words have meaning, you idiot. And you know, it's funny, but it makes a solid point.
It does. Yeah, we find ourselves entranced by new words with no meaning. And I find myself caught in this endless loop where the word cuck, cuck, cuck,
cuck.
So, yeah, basically the zombies of this film find themselves caught in a loop with these words and then violently lash out at the people saying them, whether intentionally or not. I didn't quite understand why honey was the trigger for this.
I think they said terms of endearment, so I think it just, they were flyers around town that had the cat's name. I don't think honey specifically can mean anything. It just was one of the catalysts.
Yeah, I don't think the words themselves necessarily had any meaning for the trigger, because, you know, you have kill, sample, honey, other terms of endearment, and baby talk. Those were all apparently trigger words. The three I remember were kill, sample, and honey. As I remember specifically, she said, I think, sweetheart. Actually, sweetheart, maybe too. Is that one?
Just in general terms of endearment were...
sweetie. Because I remember she said sweetie to the other... Yeah, she said sweetie to her kids, and then she said sweetie to the other girl in the studio, and then as soon as she did that, it was over for that girl.
Yeah, eventually the zombies make their way into the radio bunker. We've got Grant Mazzie and crew hiding out in the booth, and his producer won't stop saying these terms of endearment to our kids on the phone, and I was throwing popcorn at the television. Stop.
Yeah, it's like you're killing them. Good job. Because she, like, that lady said sweetie to like two or three people at least.
Yeah, it was bothering me, to say the least. Anyway.
I'm glad you noticed that too, because it's driving me nuts.
So, it's suspected the BBC News gets involved. They're talking with Grant on the line. They are trying to pin this as some kind of nationalist terrorist attack, I believe.
Yeah.
People are telling Grant, stop talking, just get off the radio, you're making things worse. He refuses. He's a, you know, he's an alpha male. He does the right thing. So he continually broadcasts nonsense, complete nonsense. Much to, I don't know, do you think that had any effect, the nonsense that he was saying?
I think that's the point, is we don't know.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. pretty soon, I believe he's bombed a shit and back by the French government.
We forgot to mention Dr. Menendez, who from the original doctor's office that was attacked, actually came into the radio station escaping from the zombies.
And he's kind of got it figured out by this point.
Yeah, as some people have said, they call him Dr. Exposition. He kind of kind of lets the audience know what's happening, and he actually gets stuck in a loop while trying to explain and is kind of able to break out of it when he stops speaking English, which I thought was a really cool addition to the movie.
I thought the entire movie... Sorry, go ahead.
I thought it was really interesting how he did start kind of losing it, and then he just sat in the booth by himself for a while, just rambling in other language, in whatever language he's speaking, because I had subtitles on and it would not tell me what he was saying or what language he was speaking. It just said incoherent babbling in another language or something.
Well, that's appropriate too.
But he was just literally talking to himself just to speak in another language until he was able to break out of it. Dr. Exposition is completely accurate, because that's literally what his entire purpose in the movie is, to explain what's happening and then run it back outside.
So, that's an interesting point, that somehow English is the infected language. I thought I liked this movie right up until this point, when I've realized that this is an anti-American piece of communist trash.
You know, actually, it's interesting. In Metal Gear Solid 5, there's this similar concept to the whole poisoning of the English language. But I'm not going to go further into that because we did not give a spoiler tag for that. But it's very interesting and very similar, actually. So I bet they totally watch this movie because it's really
English is the most spoken language in the world, so it's not necessarily anti-American.
It's, yeah, it's, Joe, you're full of crap.
I'm just watching out for my country, who I fucking love, thank you.
Now,
I will not apologize for being a patriot.
Now, listen, man, if they, you know, they infected English, which is, you know, most countries, because we're the important ones, but if they infected American, God bless it, American, then we'd have a problem.
So I thought the movie was great for a number of reasons. Number one, that it was low budget and that it really made the most of its low budget by creating a compelling story that could be told in a small space. And I appreciated that there was a, you know, there's a real ingenuity in basically saying that the words and concepts that we use in English are corrupted and can completely change a person to be a meaningless zombie. And I enjoyed the cyclical nature of the wordplay, especially in the very beginning of the film. I think that's one of the strongest openers I've seen in a long time for a film. I will say, whatever the hell it was they added after the credits was nonsense, and they probably should have excised it entirely.
So I can actually, I agree, and I looked it up, trying to find some sort of answer. And I came across an interview from director Bruce McDonald where they ask him about the after credits end scene. So here's what he had to say. This is on screenanarchy.com. That used to be the end of the movie, but before the credits. And people thought, what? What? Too much confusion. There's a tradition now where you have something at the end of the credits where you have an outtake or a hint of a sequel. The existence for it is sort of buried in there. Well, the title of the book, this movie is based on a book from 1995 called Pontypool Changes Everything, by the way. But as the title of the book suggests, that Pontypool changes everything. And one of the things I've always loved about this notion to this is that the virus could affect something as abstract as the English language. It can leap into reality itself, change the fabric of how reality is perceived. So I think that's a bunch of nonsense, but I can interpret, or at least give my best interpretation of what that little extra scene at the end is that the only way to survive, not only for Grant and the producer Sidney, but for the audience itself, is to just have complete and utter nonsense that makes no sense. They've changed their names in that end scene. What they're talking about doesn't make sense to the audience. The way it's shot is completely different from the rest of the movie. The colors are completely different. So at least for my own mental sanity, I think that's what they're going for. But in all honesty, I don't really know, and it is very weird.
Yeah, well, there is an embrace of nonsense that is, you know, the last 10 minutes of the movie is what they're supposed to be going after. So in a way, that's a celebration of Dadaism that is underappreciated in American society. Go ahead, Randall.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said earlier, I thought the whole idea was super creative. By far my favorite part and the most unnerving part was when the people break into the studio, or the zombies, I guess I should say, and they've been broadcasting an SOS of Sidney, whatever her last name is, alive.
Sidney Brier is alive.
Sidney Brier.
And so
is
all
alive.
These zombies, Sidney, they literally Brier repeat the last words they've heard, right? So this horde of zombies break into the studio and they're all chanting Sidney Brier is alive, and that was really creepy. So actually that's after they break in, but on their way out they're all chanting Sidney Brier is alive, and it's really unnerving. But the last 10 minutes when they figured out how to cure it, I didn't buy that. It was dumb. I thought it was silly.
But did they really figure out how to do it? Like, we don't know.
Well, they figured out how to break it, but they didn't figure, because, you know, none of them actually went full-on zombie. They just started to.
Or they did, because at the end, Grant is just saying random words on the radio. Did he really break it, or was he succumbing to it as well? It's never clear.
I mean, he did have a moment earlier in the movie where he started to break, but he seemed to get out of it, and I wasn't aware of the words he was using or what at that time. So I don't know if he was actually using words to break himself out accidentally or not. But at the end, I mean, he seemed like he was pretty coherent.
They still, to me. I mean, we have the French announcers over the loudspeakers saying that he is infected.
And how do we know they actually know what the deal is? Because they hear him spattering nonsense, and to them, that's the same as what the zombies are doing, is sputtering nonsense. But he, on the other hand, is specifically trying to sputter nonsense in order to break the loop in the zombie's head.
Well, you don't know what's going through the minds of the zombies. The zombies could be trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, but he's not trying to kill people, and then he totally makes out with the chick as they blow up.
Yeah, that was badass.
It's kind of, I think, why the movie succeeds, is that a lot of it is bleak and full of despair, and everyone's just kind of lost and they don't know what to do. One of the things that also works in the movie is when Grant is just reading about people in town who have died, he's reading like their names and ages, and he's like listing off full families, and the movie shows black and white clips of actual people who live where they shot the movie. I think that brought a lot of humanity in a movie that only had about four main characters in it.
Yeah. So we have gone so far over time. Overall impressions. Let's go ahead. Randall, give it.
7 out of 10. Great ideas. Pretty great execution until the end. Then it's just nonsense, which I guess is kind of the point and why other people do like it. I don't buy it.
I'm going to say this was one of the more compelling movies I've seen in a long, long time. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 7. Perfect score.
9.5 out of 10 for me. One of my favorite horror movies that have come out in the past 10 years and possibly of all time.
So if you guys want to play along with us, I think that we're going to do this again. I think we're going to watch another film and try to discuss it on the air. There's a horror movie that came out, I'm going to say about a year and a half ago. It's finally on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet, and I'm dying to. The Invitation. If you guys want to play along with us this week, you should watch The Invitation. Anybody have any notes before we kill it for the day?
I haven't talked about my cat yet. Albus is doing well.
Good.
Good. Are you dressing Albus up?
No, he doesn't let me.
Week.
I've tried.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today. Let's close it with a track that I really, really, really genuinely love. Buckshot Facelift dropped an EP a couple of weeks ago. This has the sweet cover of the Ramones' Pet Sematary. So enjoy it. I'm Joe Thrash and Kill. With me today was 365 Days of Horror and Randall Thor. This has been the Toilet of Hell Radio Show. We'll see you next week.
Yee-hee. Control break.
ladies and gentlemen. Next and last stop, Forest Hill 71st Avenue. Once again, next and last stop, Forest Hill 71st Avenue. Please make sure you have all your personal belongings before you exit the train at Forest Hill 71st Avenue. This train will be out of customer service. Once again, this train will be out of customer service at Forest Hill 71st Avenue. Please make sure you have all your personal belongings with you.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.